Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Bigfoot and Company. This is Dr. John. So glad to have everybody with us today. We've got a great show lined up. We, of course, have our co-host, Matt Delph. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
I'm glad to be here. You did a wonderful job hosting the talks on Saturday at the South Carolina Lizard Man Festival. It was a blast, and just enjoyed it, and you did a great job. It was good to see you there. And you have brought us this wonderful, wonderful guest, and I'm so glad he's here. Why don't you tell us a little bit about him?
Okay, we got Vic Cundiff, and he hosts the Bigfoot Eyewitness Radio Show and the Dogman Encounters Show. He gets a lot of reports and shares people's story, and going to kind of turn the tables on him this time. He's usually the one doing the interviews, and we're going to switch it around on him and do the interview on him this time.
Yeah.
So, how are you doing, Vic?
I'm doing good, but I could be better. You guys are getting me excited. You're talking about this great guest you had lined up for today's show, and I'm thinking, wow, who is this guy or woman? I want to hear who this is. And then you said it was me. I thought, oh, okay.
So what? How long have you been doing these shows? Let's get it started. Kind of tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started.
Well, I started in 2007. I used to be the co-host of Campfire Shadows. Back then, in 2007, I started listening to podcasts, Sasquatch-specific podcasts. As a diehard fan, I think around 2004, 2005 or so, it was one of those situations where everybody would line up in the community, the cryptic community, that is. A lot of us would basically wait for certain shows to air on Blog Talk on, like, maybe Monday night you have this show, Tuesday night you have this show. Well, one of the shows I used to routinely tune into was Campfire Shadows. Well, back then, Bear and this woman named Evie and Shane, Coonbo, Dan, Vicky, all these people were just regulars on this show, and that was by far and away my favorite show. Well, after I think about a year of me listening to it, something happened and Bear decided to leave. I'm not sure if he decided to leave to just spend more time in the field. I think that's what happened. But anyway, when he did step aside and leave the show, there was a void there that they had been talking about filling for a while. Well, at one point, Bear, he brought up the idea, well, how about putting Vic in my place? How about having Vic as a co-host on the show? And when he said that, I thought, wow, why would you say that? So one thing led to the other, or one thing led to another, and before long, I found myself as a co-host on the show. And that's how it all started back in 2007.
Vic, no. That's a great story. That's exactly how I got started and how all this Bigfoot and Company got started. I'm a buddy of Maestro from WCW, and he was on VOC Nation, and they were looking for some shows, and he said, John, you've been on radio before. Why don't you do a podcast? I said, well, okay. And so I did one for about 3 weeks, and Brady Hicks picked it up, and then it just mushroomed into Scarycast. And then Bigfoot and Company, and I knew Matt, so I said, Matt, you'd be the great co-host for Bigfoot and Company. And, you know, I think that's how a lot of folks end up getting started. It might be quite by accident, but it's a lot of fun, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, it is a lot of fun. It's funny, 15 years ago, if you would have asked me if I would be doing this for a living, I would have told you you're crazy, but here I am. This is what I do. Now, when I just mentioned the fact that I do this for a living, and I do, I don't do anything else. This is what I do. I help dogman eyewitnesses get over their experiences. And then also, too, I happen to host Bigfoot Eyewitness, but my main focus is by far and away on helping dogman eyewitnesses. But, yeah, if you would have told me I'd be doing this for a living 15 years ago, like I said, I would have told you flat out, you're crazy. No way.
Now, which did you start first, the Bigfoot Eyewitness Radio or the Dogman?
I started Dogman Encounters. The first episode of Dogman Encounters aired August 22nd of 2015, I believe it was. So, yeah, we're coming up on 4 years if I have my numbers straight.
Okay.
Yeah, Bigfoot
eyewitness. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Bigfoot eyewitness. I don't think I aired the first episode of that until I believe it was December 22nd of 2017, I believe.
Oh, okay. Nice. What made you so interested in the Dogman phenomenon, Bigfoot? Was it just, you know, from listening, being a fan, or anything, you know, really stick out to you?
Well, two things, really. I've always been a hardcore fan on cryptids in general, but up until I found out about the Dogman phenomenon, I was just really, Bigfoot, the topic of Sasquatch sightings were clearing the way, number one, with me. Well, when I did find out about Dogman, all of a sudden what had drawn me to the Sasquatch phenomenon, that was put on the back burner, because to me, everything about Dogman is 10 times more interesting. They're that much more creepy, they're that much more frightening, they're that much more reclusive, so much less is known about them. Yeah, everything that drew me to the Sasquatch phenomenon, like I said, that's why, when it comes to Dogman, I was drawn to them by a factor of 10 times more. And, yeah, what happened was when I was co-hosting Campfire Shadows with Shane McMahon, who has since passed away, unfortunately, but back then in 2007, 2008, when I was hosting or co-hosting that show with Shane, people started talking about running into these dog-faced boogers. And when I first heard about these dog-faced boogers, I thought, okay, yeah, maybe that's just some kind of a Sasquatch or something, a funny name for this type of Sasquatch that's found in a certain area. But as I found out more about what they were talking about and found out that, no, this is something that basically can, not always, but can look like a werewolf, I thought, whoa, wait a second now. And as I dug into it more and more, I was just blown away. You got to be kidding me. And as I did dig into it more and found out that, okay, yeah, you can go to the corner store if you have a Bigfoot encounter and find someone who can help you deal with it, with these Dogman eyewitnesses, it didn't take me long to find out that if they had an encounter, there really wasn't anyone that they could contact to actually count on helping them deal with the trauma of their experience. So I thought, you know what? There's a definite need here for someone to do that, and I think I could do a pretty good job of helping these people. So basically, I put everything in position to set myself up to be able to do what I do now with Dogman encounters. And yeah, I still want to pinch myself. I'm so happy to be in a position to help these people the way I at least try to. So yeah, I can't believe I'm in this position to do what I do now.
Okay, we're getting a little bit of feedback there from something. Not sure what's going on there. Can you hear me all right?
I can now.
Okay, good. Yeah, there we go. So, like you were talking about, I do these Bigfoot conferences. I've had my own encounter. I know how traumatizing it is. And I do these conferences, and I talk to these conferences, and I talk to witnesses, and you can see a relief. Whenever they come across and they tell you their story, you can actually see a relief because they're not getting ridiculed. And it's all different types of people. It's from doctors and lawyers and, you know, police, and, you know, you got all different types of people. And they don't have to suffer the ridicule at these conferences, and they actually get a relief because a lot of people, you know, get ridiculed for this kind of stuff. And I think that's great that, you know, you find joy in helping these people, you know, get that relief off their shoulders, because I know it you carry this the rest of your life when you have an encounter. And Dogman is a lot more aggressive than the Bigfoot stories. A lot more aggressive. And a lot of people in the Bigfoot community, I've noticed, and I'm sure you have too, a lot of the people think that Dogman in the Bigfoot area is kind of BS. They don't believe in the Dogman. They think it's just a different form of a Bigfoot, misidentification. But I've been doing this for 20 plus years, and I can tell the difference now between the dog man and the Bigfoot encounters. I believe they're two different species. What's your thought on that with the Bigfoot and the dog man? Do you believe it's two different species and been around and so forth?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Excuse me. Yeah, there's no debate in my opinion. If you look at the anatomical features, a dogman can't be a type of Sasquatch. When you strip everything down to its bare bones, it's pretty easy in most cases to identify what you're dealing with. With a Sasquatch, if you look at the fact that, yes, they do have fingerprints, they don't have a tail. Looking at their anatomy, they're clearly adapted to brachiate through trees, swinging from limb to limb. If you look at all their physical features, they've got fingernails, toenails. If you look at all their physical features, it's clear that they are a member of the ape family. If you look at dog men, they have claws. They don't have fingernails or toenails. They have other anatomical features with the canine-style back legs that most dog men have. Of course, you have some cryptids out there that some people call type 3 dog men, and definitely they're not a type 3 Sasquatch. They are not a kind of Sasquatch, as I'll get into in just a bit here. But, yeah, you do have some cryptids out there that some people refer to as dog men that don't have hominid, that don't have canid-style legs, that is, the way most dog men do. But, yeah, when you look at the anatomical features that dog men have, there's no way they could be a member of the ape family. So, in other words, there's no way they could be a kind of Sasquatch. So, yeah, there's definitely a difference. Now, as far as getting back to this whole type 3 dogman slash some people call them type 3 Sasquatch thing, if you look at the fact that they always have sharp teeth, eyewitnesses who get a good up close and personal of a type 3, they'll always tell you that every tooth in that creature's mouth was sharp. Well, with an ape, in other words, with a Sasquatch, because Sasquatch are apes, with an ape, they will never have sharp teeth directly behind their canine teeth. Those teeth are never sharp. But if you're dealing with a cryptid like a type 3, where those teeth are always sharp, that right there tells you, okay, well, that clearly separates that cryptid from possibly being a member of the ape family. So if it can't be a member of the ape family, guess what? It can't be a kind of Sasquatch. Also, type 3s always have claws on the tips of their fingers and on the tips of their toes. That, too, is another disqualifying anatomical feature that lets you know, okay, well, apes never have claws on the tips of their fingers. They never have claws on the tips of their toes. They always have toenails and fingernails. That right there is another way that you can rule out the possibility that type 3s could be a kind of Sasquatch. Now, having said that, yeah, I definitely don't for a second think or say that they're a member of the canid family. No, they obviously aren't. What they are, I can't tell you, but I can tell you what they aren't, and that is they're definitely not a kind of Sasquatch.
Good explanation. I've noticed also, this is what gets me, okay, in the Bigfoot community, they say, okay, you know, dogman misidentification. They don't believe in dogman, but yet they believe in Bigfoot. And that right there kind of blows my mind, because once you experience something traumatic like that, then you know anything is possible. Anything is possible. So if this Bigfoot, which I know for a fact exists, I've actually seen it, confused, didn't, you know, trying to figure out what you're looking at, and it was traumatizing. So it kind of opens up your mind to different outside the box. Can't think inside the box when you come across these cryptids. And it kind of gets to me because, you know, you've got the different types of Bigfoot people that, and, you know, if they're going to say they believe in Bigfoot, but yet they're going to say there is no such thing as a dog man, it kind of hypocritical, I think, because, you know, you got people doing the same thing with Bigfoot. But as far as, like, the Bigfoot encounters, you've had a lot. They're not as aggressive as, like, the dogman encounters. Have you ever had any dogman encounters, that stories of where they were nice and, you know, not aggressive, that they were friendly?
Yeah, there have been encounters where, I guess if you want to use the word nice, that word has been used. I don't know if that's the word I would use to describe the experience, but non-aggressive definitely is an accurate way to describe the experience that that particular eyewitness had. If you listen to last week's show, episode 255 of Dogman Encounters, here you've got an eyewitness who, as a 12-year-old boy in the woods of Germany, he came on and talked about how this dogman, a 7-plus-foot dogman, came into his camp. He was camping with this friend of his. This dogman came into their camp and was standing less than a foot and a half away from him as he was sitting there by the fire. Now, if it was that dangerous, it could have ripped him apart. It would have ripped him apart. But no, it just stood there less than a foot and a half from him and looked across the fire at his friend for about, I think, 6 to 9 seconds. And then it just jumped over his friend and headed off into this clearing and left them. Never scratched them, never hurt them, nothing. So, yeah, if that's what happened, then we're not exactly talking about an overly dangerous creature. But don't get me wrong, I think just like people, just like any other animal, any other type of creature out there, you've got ones that maybe are good-natured, I guess if you could describe it that way, and then you have others who are deviant by nature. If you think about it, every day in the United States, and I tell this to eyewitnesses too, every day in the United States, people get attacked by their house cats. Now, that doesn't mean that if you're sitting in the living room next to your house cat that you need to be overly worried. But for these people who say, oh, no, they're safe. You know, dogmen are safe. You don't have to worry about them. Well, if people are even getting bitten and scratched by their house cats, what does that tell you? There's no animal out there that you can point to and say, oh, I'd never have to worry about that creature posing any kind of a risk to me. It's never going to bite me. It's never going to scratch me because that kind of animal just flat out does not exist. So, yeah, should you show a lot of caution around dog men? Yeah, I think you should. But I think it's very naive to say just because I've had so many people on the show who didn't talk about ever being hurt by one, I think it's pretty naive to take that and say, okay, well, if I have an encounter with one, there's no chance of it attacking me because, like I tell eyewitnesses, I've been doing this for years, obviously, and just to kind of paint the picture on how many dogman eyewitnesses I've spoken with, over the several years I've been doing this, I don't even bat an eye if I get 3-4 brand-new encounters in one day. And it's no big deal to me if I get 6 to 7, because that happens. Sometimes I get 6-7 brand-new dogman encounters coming in one day. If you consider those numbers and the fact I've been doing this for years, that should give you a pretty good idea how many dogman eyewitnesses I've been speaking with since I've been doing this. Well, if you look at that number and consider the fact that over all this time that I've been doing this, I've only spoken with who, in my opinion, were 3 credible eyewitnesses who told me about ever being attacked by dogmen, that should give you a pretty good idea about how dangerous, for the most part, most dogmen are. Yeah, can they attack? And do they attack? Yeah, apparently from time to time they do, but not very often at all. So, yeah, when I get asked that question, how dangerous are dogmen? What I just shared with you, in my opinion, is about the best way to clear that up. I think they can be dangerous, but by far and away, in most cases, it would appear that they are not.
I'm a huge dogman fan. And I know this is Bigfoot and company, but I think they kind of go hand in hand. What have you heard about, like, I know you've heard stories of Bigfoot and the dogman coexisting and going to actual war and stuff. Is there any good stories you got on that, you know, where they avoid each other or their relationship?
Well, it's been my experience talking with so many eyewitnesses. Of course, you have variations on this. Some people have come forward and talked about seeing them getting along, but for the most part, eyewitnesses that I've spoken with, they've told me that whenever they've, for example, you know, you've got this eyewitness over here who has a family, a troop of Sasquatch that have been living on their property for who knows how long. Well, they'll tell you that when the dog man that they ran into came into the area, all of a sudden all those Sasquatch, they headed for the high country. That's almost always the way it is. Or you might have some eyewitnesses who will tell you about, okay, well, yeah, I do have Sasquatch and Dogmen in my area, but the Dogmen tend to stay on this side of this one creek that is close by. And the Sasquatch, they tend to stay on the other side of the creek. There's almost always, if they're living somewhat, I guess you could say, together, seems like there's always some kind of a dividing barrier that keeps them apart. But I have heard about Dogmen, I don't know if you would call it making raids or what, but I have heard about Dogmen that apparently would sometimes cross that creek or whatever that dividing barrier is and head into the territory of the Sasquatch. I don't know if that was to maybe grab a younger Sasquatch for food purposes or what, but yeah, apparently they sometimes do that. But yeah, my opinion is they normally, not always, but they normally mix like oil and water.
So as you've done this for years, of course, what do you get more reports of, the Dogman or Bigfoot?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, Dogman. Yeah, Sasquatch encounters, they come in, but when you consider the fact that on the website for BigfootEyewitness.com, I've got a disclaimer. I don't have the time to help Sasquatch eyewitnesses deal with their encounters. I have a hard time keeping up with all the Dogman eyewitnesses who contact me.
Right.
On the website for BigfootEyewitness.com, I've got a disclaimer above the form that an eyewitness can fill out to report their Sasquatch sighting that please only fill out this form, please only submit a form if you're interested in coming on Bigfoot Eyewitness Radio and telling the listeners about your sighting or experiences with Sasquatch. But with Dogmen, I don't do that. I don't care if you want to come on the show or not. If you had an encounter and want help dealing with it, then by all means, contact me. Be more than happy to help you the best that I can. If you want to come on the show, then by all means, we can do that too. But Dogman Encounters doesn't exist for the purpose of, well, if you want to contact me, you have to come on the show. No, that's not how it is. Dogman Encounters exists to help people, and doing the show, that happens to come along with it if that's what a particular eyewitness wants to do.
Now, with the Bigfoot, I've talked to you before, you know, the woo part, they talk about that. And I'm sure there's probably a woo part of the Dogman. And I know you think flesh and blood animal, do you believe the same thing with the Dogman as well?
You know what, I bounce back and forth on that. Just about when I'm convinced, after talking with who knows how many, in my opinion, very credible Dogman eyewitnesses about their experiences, who tell me about, okay, they saw the Dogman drinking out of a stagnant pond, and this other eyewitness over here saw a Dogman eating a rancid carcass that was struck by a car, roadkill. And you get so many people telling you about things like that. So it kind of steers me over towards thinking, okay, yeah, they must be flesh and blood. But then you have so many eyewitnesses after that who report seeing the Dogman do this, do that, that are clearly things that point towards them being ethereal and not flesh and blood. I bounce back and forth between being convinced that they must be flesh and blood and being ethereal. I don't know for sure if they're flesh and blood or if they are demonic in nature, but to answer your question, I basically bounce back and forth between the two. Who knows? That's about the best way I can answer that. I really couldn't say for sure.
You know, this is John, I got a quick comment. Matt and I are like 180 degrees apart. I have lots of friends that talk to me about mind speak. And I actually experienced some things this past weekend at a very good friend's house who pretty well known in the mind speak community, Robin McCrae. And she tells me that there are many times when Dogmen and Bigfoot, they just kind of coexist because they're all there. They're all part of the same community, kind of like you, Matt, and I are all part of the same community. And Maestro from WCW and I saw some crazy things. I was so glad he got to see him too. We couldn't identify if it was Dogman, or we couldn't identify if it was Bigfoot that it was doing it. I mean, I saw lights in her backyard that were just roving around. I mean, fairly large things, and it was just amazing. Do you get many? Do you talk with many folks in the Mind Speak community?
No, not really. I have had some eyewitnesses who talked about being in their front yard, for example, and they saw a dog man, and all of a sudden it was like these words just popped into their head or something like that. But, yeah, they've been pretty few and far between. I'm not saying that I buy the whole mind speak thing for sure. I try to remain open to things, but unless I experience that, I'd have to be, wow, that's a big step to take. I guess the best way to explain that is I'm definitely open to mind speak, unlike a lot of people in the cryptid community, but to be sold on it, I'd have to experience that myself. That's one heck of a big step to take. But, yes, to answer your question, I have had some people contact me about that, but, yeah, most dogman eyewitnesses who reach out to me, they never report anything like that.
Okay. I was curious.
He was talking about, well, I'm not against the mind speak, because I've come across things now. I've done it for so long that it has got me. At first it was flesh and blood, Bigfoot, all these cryptids were flesh and blood, but now I've gotten across to a point where things are unexplainable, and so it's brought me to a new level, and I've been studying a lot of the mind speak, and these people that I've interviewed and talked to, you know, there's something going on there. We're all energy. Everything is energy based, and there's a bigger picture, I think, to all this with the dog man and the Bigfoot, and a lot of it's covered up. But you know, there is a scientific explanation, I believe, for even the mind speak, because you know, the U.S. government talks of you know, they done a thing like for remote viewing, you know. They were trying to train people how to remote view. And a lot of people think that's just crazy. That goes in with the mind speak and the woo. But a lot of this stuff can be explained scientifically. Like, have you, Vic, heard of people being zapped by Bigfoot?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've definitely heard of that. I can't say that I've heard of people being zapped by a dog man, though.
Well, see, that, okay, for example, we've got animals out there, scientifically has been proven, they use, like, infrasound, sonar, and who's to say that, you know, Sasquatch don't have these abilities also. And scientifically, you know, it's not, I don't consider it woo, but it's scientifically, it's proven that animals do, you know, have these abilities. A lot of people don't think about it or talk about it, but, for example, you know, an elephant has an infrasound, and it sends out these, you know, this tone. And a lot of people don't realize, and I believe that's what happens with the Bigfoot and these people getting zapped. And if the body, the human body, if you look it up scientifically, the human body can only have so much of it before it physically gets sick. And all the symptoms fall straight into being zapped from a Bigfoot. So I believe there, you know, a lot more to it than, I don't believe these people are crazy. There's just a bigger picture, and people don't want to accept it, you know. I mean, look at a bat, you know, things blind, you know, and the dolphins, you know, they use all these abilities, the sonar and so on, you know, who's to say that this Bigfoot don't? So, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, Matt, you know, you use the term that I hate the most, woo. That is in after 3 years at the Rand Institute of Parapsychology, that's complete, that term is ignorant. Because there are just things that we do not have the scientific ability to measure. We cannot measure them. So labeling them as something silly and otherworldly is just ignorance. I mean, because my great example is 100 years ago, if I'd showed you a little black box and said in 100 years you can talk to China at will, you would have told me that I was crazy and that's nothing but a cell phone. So, you know, we are on the food chain. Out of 10, we're about a 2 or 3 maybe. We don't have, in general, now the government is a lot farther along the food chain than we are, and they don't tell us what they're doing. But in general, in the commercial world and whatever, you know, we're about a 2 or 3 on the food chain. We don't really know. We cannot measure a lot of these things, you know, portals and all that. We don't know how to determine them. We don't have the technology. We suffer, humans suffer from a lack of technology. That's the only thing that we suffer from. Well, maybe a few other things. But, you know, we suffer from a lack of technology. And when people just lump something into the word woo, it's just silly, because it's just simply a lack of technology. But in 100 years, our technology, the technology that the average person has, will certainly be much higher, and we'll be able to understand these things better, I believe. Now, again, that's my belief, and that has really come from, like, knowing a lot of folks in the MindSpeak community now and talking with them and everything. So it's just kind of that's what I think. I believe everybody needs to realize that we are in the threshold of a huge learning process. Now, Vic, I would bet you probably agree with that we're in the threshold of a learning process on all this, right?
Oh, yeah, I do agree. Yeah, it is frustrating to hear how people who come forward and talk about experiences like MindSpeak are treated. Again, I can't say that I wholeheartedly buy into it, but like I said, I am open to it. I guess it is possible. Anything's possible. If anyone listening is into, what is it called, into quantum physics, recently, you just mentioned all the things that are suddenly becoming known to us. Recently, we discovered things that are called quarks. Quarks are little subatomic-sized particles that have really strange characteristics and qualities. They can wink into and wink out of existence. You know, there's a podcast I listen to who has hosts on it that I respect a lot. One of those hosts, whenever he's faced with a topic that, such as MindSpeak, where someone poses that as possibly being a reality, he says that, well, something like that has never been proven to exist in the animal kingdom. That's unprecedented. So how can I believe that could possibly exist? Well, if you look at quarks, until we discovered quarks and how they wink into and wink out of existence, nothing before we discovered quarks fit that mold. So just because something is unprecedented, that doesn't mean that it can't be a possibility. So it's for reasons like that that I keep my mind open to the possibility that maybe this whole MindSpeak thing is a reality. I don't know. But again, to qualify what I just said, I'd have to experience that to say, okay, yeah, it definitely is a reality, because I really don't know. It does seem like a stretch to me.
Okay.
As John was saying, though, the people he knows with the MindSpeak, I know them well also, and I mean, they're really great people. They're not crazy. And about 3 weeks ago, I went on an expedition, and those people, they didn't know that I was going to be going on it. And right before I went, I had one individual stop me and said, "They know you're coming." And I looked at him kind of weird, and I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And said, "The Bigfoot know that you were coming, and they were going to leave you a sign." Well, it's kind of funny, because I didn't mention it to them that I was going. They had no clue that I was going. And that night, of course, I did have some activity about 3 weeks ago. I had some rocks thrown at me and found tracks, 17-inch tracks with toes and so forth. But, I mean, there's something to it. I'm not against it, and I don't even like to label it, like he said, the woo. There's more to it than what we're looking at. And he's talking about quantum physics. Everything is energy. And when you talk about Bigfoot having these self-illuminating eyes, and it's not eye shine, reflective eye shine like most animals have. This is a self-illuminating. So the energy in these beings are more superior than I believe what we have. And I started out flesh and blood, been doing it 20 years, but you get to a point where you see more than just the flesh and blood experience, or you come across stuff that you can't explain, but you still can explain it scientifically, but people just want to box it out. And you can't do that in this field. You got to step outside that box if you want to learn more. And you got to, you know, just got to level up, basically. And like I said, the whole mind speak, there's been people that have, you know, it's been proven, like that little boy. I seen the news article not too long ago. Little boy was doing the whole mind speak. And they was, you know, studying him, working with him. So there's more to it. And these people that, you know, they say that Bigfoot's talking to them, all that stuff. It's never happened to me. But I know these people are hearing something's going on with these people, I know of, for sure. I can't explain it, but I know something is going on. But I've never experienced the mind speak. If that makes any sense.
That does make sense. That's well said. Yeah, like I said, I feel so bad for these people who come forward and talk about something like that and get ridiculed the way they do. For us being, when you consider the fact that the cryptid community is researching creatures that aren't even proven to be in existence, at least not by the scientific community, that is, for most of them to be so closed-minded, it really doesn't make a bit of sense.
And I didn't mean to cut you off, John. Go ahead and...
You were just continuing on kind of my train of thought. You know, I don't know. I mean, when you meet remote viewers and they shoot images into your head and I say, well, what's that? And they said, draw it, and I draw it. And then they've drawn the same thing, you know, I guess based on who I've been around and the research that I've done. I mean, I've seen a lot of things that you just can't explain. And I think everybody just needs to keep their minds open. That's what they really need to do. And keep talking to people. Because there are folks out there, and it's a very, very, you know, Vic, it's an entirely tiny, small percent of the people in the world that can do this, but it's something that will grow. I mean, I believe that we used to be able to do it. That's how we were able to communicate back in the 1200s, 1300s, 1400s. But I think it's, you know what, we're just in an interesting time where people are getting, where people really like this. They want to, they experience, they want to explore the ideas of physical contact versus mind speak contact versus all this, you know, all the things that we're experiencing. I think we're in an exciting time, and especially, Vic, with what you're doing, giving folks an opportunity to talk. That's what we need to do. I think being heard from is one of the most important things in the world. And it's and I would say that what you're doing, not only making a living, but you're part of a great humanitarian effort, because folks really do get traumatized. They get worried, and don't they feel better once they talk to you, Vic?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, countless times I've described the effect as being like being in a prison with no walls, because here they've had these horrible experiences, and as people, as humans, how do we normally get better when we have a traumatic experience? We share it. We talk about it. Well, if you're in a situation like that, if you have an encounter with a dog man, how can you do that? You know, if you try to share it with family and friends, you're more likely than not to be laughed at and not taken seriously. If I had a nickel for every wife, for example, who shared their experience with a husband and got laughed at, ridiculed at family get-togethers, they're the butt of so many jokes, yeah, it's really a shame. By being able to open up to someone such as myself and know that they're not going to be laughed at, yeah, for most of these people, it's just such a relief. So, yeah, like I said, I'm just so glad. I feel so blessed to be in a position to offer a platform for these people. And if they want to come out and really put it out there and not just tell me about their experience, if they want to put it out there for the community that follows Dogman Encounters, the show, then that helps a lot too, because they know they're not going to be laughed at. So, yeah, I'm really strict on how the eyewitnesses who come on the show and share their experiences are treated. I don't allow, the last thing I'm going to do is to allow someone to heckle them, because here they put their trust in me to provide a platform where they can put their experience out there and be treated with respect and with dignity, the last thing I'm going to do is to let some of these idiots who just want to troll shows come and say these nasty things that they tend to say. So, yeah, to answer your question, yeah, it seems to help these people quite a bit to be able to do that.
And I'm going to reply to that, and I'm going to give a big shout-out to Matt Delp, because Matt has never laughed at anything that I've said, because he knows that when I'm out there doing research and I say, this is what I've found out, all he says is, tell me more. So, Matt, thank you very much, because as you know, you and I are in a way 180 degrees different, but neither one of us ever laughs at each other, and that's part of a super healthy, productive relationship that is going to make something happen. So thanks, Matt.
True. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
And same goes for you. Same goes for you.
I know we both may occasionally roll our eyes in private, but you know what? We listen and we respect what we do. And then that's what Vic does. So, I mean, I think I would say that the three of us are part of a very healthy community in exploring and trying to figure out this cryptid thing. That, Vic, it's a tough nut to crack, isn't it?
It is a tough nut to crack, but we didn't get into this because it was easy. We knew it'd be a challenge. There'd be a lot of challenges when you get into something like this. So, yeah, it's definitely no surprise.
Absolutely.
And like John was talking about with the trauma, you know, I've experienced it. Total skeptic until I actually experienced and seen it with my own eyes. And I believe I had to have that trauma to open my eyes to a bigger picture. And that's why I love these conferences. People come to me, they'll tell me their stories, and you can see a relief. And, you know, I'm out in the field, and I tried to, you know, what I've experienced, I've took in all my research, because I know what I have seen and what I have experienced for a fact, that I can definitely chalk that down as a fact. But what I can't discredit these mind speak and all this other stuff. So, you know, it's a whole different world when you open your mind to it and you see what's actually going on. There's a bigger picture to all this, and I believe it's all linked together. The Bigfoot, the Sasquatch, the UFOs, the whole paranormal, all the other cryptids, you know, and so on. Now, Vic, you said that you don't ever do any research out in the woods or anything like that, but surely you've got a great Bigfoot story that has really inspired you, as, you know, like with the Bigfoot eyewitness, you know, that you do. What story stands out to you is probably one of your favorites.
Wow. Well, towards the beginning of the show, there was a gentleman who came on and talked about an experience he had, several experiences, with a juvenile Sasquatch that he and his friends called Mike. And what got me most about his experiences that he came on the show and shared the experiences, I can't remember what episode that was, but I think it was like one of the first 20 episodes. But nonetheless, he talked about a time when he and his friend were in this barn, and I think they heard Mike outside. They brought Mike into the barn, and I think Mike was a little bit smaller than they were at the time. I think they were maybe 10, 12 years old or something like that. Well, they went up into the loft of the barn, if I remember correctly, and something happened. One thing led to another. And in a sign of affection, he talked about how Mike hugged him. Well, I guess Mike was so strong, he was almost popping this guy's eyeballs out when he was hugging him. Sighting, that really stands out is pretty much the most, that's the one that really stands out the most to me when I think about all the episodes, all the stories that have been shared since I did that show. I'm really fuzzy on all the other details of what he talked about because I have so many sightings that are shared with me. But, yeah, I think that one stands out more than any other.
That's awesome. Yeah, if it's like I said, a chimpanzee is 10 times stronger than a human. Couldn't you imagine a Sasquatch, how much stronger, you know, the and getting a hug from one of them would be definitely an experience.
Now, oh, no doubt.
Now, what is your thought? What do you believe that the Sasquatch is? What are your thoughts on it? What do you, you know, where it deranged from or what, you know, what you actually think a Bigfoot is?
I wouldn't be surprised if they are descendants of Gigantopithecus. Maybe they aren't, but so far, to date, that seems like by far and away the most logical explanation. So maybe they are some other kind of hominid that we just flat out didn't know about that evolved alongside Gigantopithecus. But if you had to ask me today what I think they are, that seems like the most likely explanation. But, yeah, they could be anything. You run into so many people who are convinced, well, they have to be this, they have to be that. Yeah, I'm not going to throw any absolutes at you because I'll be the first one to admit I really don't know.
I don't think anybody knows, really. I believe the government, of course, they know. We all know that they know, and they cover up anything they can. How many different types of Bigfoot? You were talking about earlier, you know, the different types. How many different types have you talked to different witnesses about and kind of explain, you know, the different types that you've learned about?
Well, as we kind of beezed around the bush about towards the start of the show, you've got people who think type threes are kind of Sasquatch, but yeah, I don't buy into that at all. In fact, I can tell you that I know better as a fact. I know better using anatomical evidence that can't be the case. With that in mind, I've spoken with eyewitnesses about three different kinds of Sasquatch. In my opinion, there are only three different varieties of Sasquatch out there. I could be wrong. I'll be the first to admit I could be so wrong about that it isn't even funny. But right now, sitting here today, it's my opinion that there are only three kinds of Sasquatch out there. You've got type ones, which are basically a patty type. You've got the type twos, which are more of a hominid style, a them and us kind of Sasquatch, like Kumbo talks about all the time. Then you've got the little people who Matt Knapp has seen, other people, Cindy Goodbrake, she's seen them. The little people, I guess they tend to be maybe 3, maybe 4 feet tall at the most and look like a smaller version of, I think it is type twos. Yeah, those threes, I've had eyewitnesses on who talked about seeing all those different varieties. But, yeah, I haven't spoken with anyone who's seen any other kind of variety besides that.
Well, mine, the one that really stands out for me is the mine was more, you know, rounded-shaped head that I had witnessed and more of a, kind of reminds you of an orangutan. Didn't have the cone-shaped head. It was more rounded and long hair. And I've heard of them, you know, different types like with the, they consider that lot, you know, Florida, the skunk ape. But I've noticed it's just not bright in Florida, that type. I've done a lot of, like I said, years of research, and I've experienced, you know, where witnesses have pointed out to pictures from the skunk ape, the orangutan-looking variety. You know, they pointed out to them, and then they pointed out to, you know, the patty type. Now, have all these witnesses, have any of them described a Bigfoot with fangs or canines?
Yeah, some of them have described seeing canines on the Sasquatch they encountered. Oh, yeah, I need to qualify what I just said. I have had eyewitnesses on who talked about skunk apes. Now, I don't know if skunk apes are more of a type 2 that just happened to live down in the South. I don't know for sure about that, but I have had people come on who talked about having encounters with skunk apes. But, yeah, to answer your question, I have had people on, several people on, who talked about seeing fangs, canines, in the mouths of whatever Sasquatches they saw.
And see, I believe they're just like any other animal. Like if you got a dog, you got different breeds. And I believe the same thing with the Bigfoot Sasquatch. Now, as we look into, you know, you're talking about with the mind speaking stuff, the Indians used to talk of, like the Skookum and stuff like that had come down. It would kidnap, you know, it's flesh and blood. It would kidnap, you know, children and women, and was really aggressive. Then you had also the Indians that talk about, you know, that Bigfoot is this, the woodland spirit. It's the man of the forest. I kind of believe, kind of bounce, you know, that maybe some of these people that are experienced the mind speaking stuff, maybe they're dealing with a totally different thing than what the aggressive, the flesh and blood type, you know. Do you get what I'm saying? There's more of a spiritual side to one of them, and then there's the flesh and blood animal. I think that there's two different categories on that.
Yeah, because you might
hear
be right.
Different Indians. Because with Indians, you know, they always, you know, they had different beliefs, but a lot of them, you know, were the flesh and blood. You know, it was a physical, you know, you didn't mess with them. You stayed away from them. Then you had the other Indians that would talk about it being, you know, a spirit, the woodland spirit. It would come and go. It could, you know, travel through portals or come through mind speak and so on. And that's my theory right now, is that you're dealing with two different type things. And they might come as an image of a hairy person or something, but I think they're two different things, to be honest. Two totally different things. Now, whenever you get to the dog man, how many different types of dog man do you think there are? And kind of explain each one, because I got a few questions about that.
That's where things get kind of muddy. The Native Americans believe that there are seven different kinds of dogmen out there in the wild places of the world, but some people have postulated the idea that there are 13, 14 different kinds. I really don't know how many kinds might be out there. There might be kinds that we don't even know about. But, yeah, you've got two different families. I call them families, two different groups of dogmen, in my opinion. You've got canine types with their canid-style legs. Then you have type 3s. Again, I don't think for a second that type 3s are kind of canid. I think that dogman's just an appellation people have hung on them, that on type 3s, that they didn't know what else to call them, so they called them dogmen. I guess that's why they did it. But nonetheless, in my opinion, you have two different groups, canine-type dogmen. You've got type 3s. Type 3s have hominid-style legs the way we do, the way Sasquatch do. But as far as canine-type dogmen would go, wow, there are probably six, seven different varieties of canine-type dogmen out there. You've got canine-type dogmen that look as unassuming as a timber wolf that's standing up on its back legs. You've got canine-type dogmen that look more monstrous. They look basically like, a lot of eyewitnesses describe them as looking like the werewolf from Van Helsing. Other people report seeing dogmen, canine-type dogmen, obviously, that look like the dogman, the werewolf from Underworld, the Underworld movies. You've got some canine-type dogmen that have very disproportionately large heads. Some people call them fat heads. You've got several other kinds of canine-type dogmen out there. Now, on the type 3 side, you've got dogmen that have hominid-style legs that look like, some people say they look like the werewolf from An American Werewolf in London, but it clearly, this variety clearly has hominid-style legs. You've got type 3 dogmen that look like a basketball player that's got a fairly good amount of muscle tone, that has ears that stick up. They're on the side of their heads, but they're pointed ears. You've got type 3s that look like the Beast of Seven Shoots. You've got type 3s that look like that. Yeah, you've got so many different varieties of both canine-type dogmen and type 3s. Yeah, I couldn't possibly name them all. But I will say that, yeah, you've got apparently many more varieties of appearances to dogmen than you do Sasquatch.
Now, do you believe the Sasquatch and the dogmen are any way related, or do you just think they're two totally different animals from like a cat and a dog?
Oh, yeah, the anatomical features point towards the fact. Yeah. I don't think it's an opinion. I think it's a fact. They have to be very different. I mean, it takes so much time for something to go from looking the way Sasquatch do to being able to look like a dog man. That, yeah, I don't see how they could be related. If they are related, it's got to be in some distant way. You don't just overnight evolve from having fingernails and toenails to having claws. You don't just have the baby that has bad genetics and, okay, well, yeah, its mother and father have fingernails and toenails, but this one was just born with claws because of inbreeding. It just doesn't work that way. So, yeah, when you look at the anatomical features, they have to be far removed from one another. I don't know what their genealogy is. I'll be the first to admit that. But, yeah, if they are related, it's got to be from way back.
I've heard of, like, the Bigfoot. I've heard of different types. Like, I've had types that they've had a little bit of a face kind of sticking out, like a snout, not quite a snout. And some of them that looks like a lion in the nose area. So I'm kind of curious, you know, if they're not seeing a dog man and thinking it's a Bigfoot or the opposite, you know. But now, have you had any dog men reports that they didn't have a tail?
Oh, sure. Yeah, most type 3s that are reported don't have tails. I can't say that none of them do, but I will tell you that most of the type 3s that have been reported to me, most of them, they didn't have tails. And when we're talking about, now that we're talking about the anatomical features and everything, understand, a lot of people, they make the mistake of thinking that type 3s have to be a kind of Sasquatch because they look so much like a Sasquatch. Okay, well, they walk upright. They've got hominid-style legs. They're huge, or they can be huge. They're covered with fur. They must be a Sasquatch. Well, it's easy to think that, but cats have tails. Dogs have tails. Cats walk on all fours. Dogs walk on all fours. Cats have not a prominent muzzle the way most dogs do, but cats can have a muzzle. Dogs all have muzzles, except for the brachycephalic ones like bulldogs, for example, or pugs. If I told you about a creature that was furry, that was 2 feet tall at its shoulders, had ears sticking up, pointed ears sticking up on top of its head, and had a noticeable tail. Am I talking about a cat or a small dog? I could be talking about either one. Well, if they can be so similar in appearance, depending on the type, the breed of dog, of course, but if they can be so similar in appearance, but be so different as far as their classifications would go, then why not Sasquatch and type 3s? That's what I'm getting at here. Yeah, they might look pretty darn similar, but that doesn't mean that a type 3 is necessarily a kind of Sasquatch.
Good point. Now, I have experienced, okay, as last summer, I worked with a local vet, and they tell me where, because most of my Bigfoot reports and cryptid reports, a lot of them are older, and I need a fresh trail. So I go to the local vet, and I'm real good friends with them down there. And they'll notify me if there's been, like, a livestock killed or whatever. Well, last summer, we had 2 full-grown horses killed. Nothing ate, just ripped to shreds. Had 4 witnesses report this animal had jumped out into the road. It was a darker color, but it jumped into the road. And these women were older. They know the difference between a wild boar, a wolf, a bear, a mountain lion. And they said this animal had jumped into the road, and it was a little bit higher than the hood on their car at the shoulders. It's on all fours. The upper body was bigger than the lower body. The lower body was more canine. The upper body, they said that they just noticed it was really, you know, more bulkier. And the head and the snout, and it had a little bit of hair, but they said it had a tail. And they said that the best thing they could describe it as was looking like a hyena, but it wasn't a hyena. But they said that's the closest thing that it resembled. and it was super fast, super fast. And, you know, it jumped in the road, then it just, they slammed on their brakes, their headlights were on it, and then it, boom, took off, you know, super fast. Now, is there a type of, because that's kind of looking, to me, that's kind of sounding more like a dog man type, like a hyena type dog man. Have you heard anything described similar to that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have had people on the show talking about dogmen that they've seen that look like hyenas. Yeah, that's another kind of canine type dogman that is reported as being seen. A strange quirk, when I'm talking with eyewitnesses, of course you're going to get your fair share of ones who are just trying to blow smoke. But I use certain things as qualifiers to try and determine, okay, is this man or woman trying to blow smoke, or did they really see what they're claiming to see, i.e. a dog man? One of the things that I use, and understand, they don't come in very often, where the eyewitness is talking about seeing a dog man that looked kind of like a hyena, like what you were just talking about. But for some strange reason, when people see these hyena-looking dog men, don't know why, but if they have spots, they normally, for some reason, will only have spots below their waist. I don't know why that is, but that's one of the ways I kind of vet whether they're blowing smoke or not. If they tell me that they saw spots on this hyena-looking dog man, I'll ask them, okay, well, if you saw spots, tell me more about that. How big were they? Where were they located on its body? There are a lot of things I can do like that to vet eyewitnesses to tell if they're full of it or not. For example, episode 34 with Michael Lawrence, I don't know if you listen to the show that often, but that's the episode where Mike came on and talked about how he was camping in the Anza Borrego Desert as a Boy Scout, and that juvenile dog man came into the tent and sat on his legs, and he peed his pants, and he's looking up through the vent of the tent and the ceiling of it, and he can see its mother looking down on him. So many quote-unquote experts, they wrote in, and they were just, they couldn't believe that I let that show air, because this guy obviously is so full of it. Well, I'm laughing at them, because I used certain vetting techniques to verify that Michael was telling the truth. When he wrote in and shared that story with me, instantly I'm thinking, okay, I really need to vet this guy because this story is so over the top. So I did that. And you wouldn't believe, when I started throwing vetting questions at Mike, you would not believe how quickly he was firing back the correct answers. Instantly, ask him this, bam, answer came back correctly. Okay, well, if he was that close to you, Mike, then how about this? What did you see about this? Bam, the answer came back. That is legit. He saw what he claims to have seen. If that juvenile dog man was as close to him as he claimed it was, in other words, sitting on his legs, I knew that if it was true, he would have to know the answers to all these particular questions. So he's been vetted. It might seem over the top when you think about the possibility of a dog man sitting on your legs and licking your face the way he came on the show and talked about, but he's vetted and he's the real deal. So, yeah, I do certain things like that to try and vet people who come on the show. Now, there are people, for different reasons, they weren't very close to the dog man or for other reasons that you can't vet. But when I can vet them, I do try to do that.
Yeah. Now, see, another thing that, like with them, whenever I was interviewing them, I know they were legit. They don't believe in Bigfoot or any of that stuff. They were older women. One thing that I noticed is, you know, they didn't care if anybody believes them or not. It's similar to me. You know, I could care less if anybody believes me or not. I know what I've seen, so it doesn't matter if so-and-so or so-and-so believes me. You know, I'm not trying to prove it to anybody. I'm doing this whole research because I need answers for myself. And that was the same way with them. They said that, you know, they didn't know what they had seen. They grew up on farms, stuff like that, and they couldn't explain it. You know, they just said that, and it happened so quick, you know, you can't pick up all the details. And if it's real quick, like with my encounter, you're trying to figure out what it is at first. You know, you're trying to figure out what in the world it, you know, you're kind of confused. But like you were talking about with the answers, that's a good point. If they've had a close-up encounter, they're going to be able to tell you the different features. With me, I didn't get to see it eye-to-eye like my encounter, but I do know what I did see, and I can describe that, you know, like it was yesterday. No problem, you know, the way everything went down, everything. But, you know, I can't describe its toes or its belly button or fingernails or, you know, stuff like that. And you can feel also a lot of times from the people if they're pretty sincere. Now, do you think the dog men, do they migrate? Do they travel, like, okay, Bigfoot, for example, travel the waterways. They travel waterways, they cave systems. What about dog man?
Oh, yeah. If you think about it, a creature or creatures as big as dogmen are, they would have to move around a lot. Otherwise, they would totally deplete the area's food sources, resources. So, yeah, just like any large predator, they would have to move around quite a bit. Now, how huge their home range is, I really couldn't tell you. In my opinion, it would be in their best interest to have a home range instead of just wandering to who knows where, never coming back to the same areas after a certain period of time has gone by. If they did have a quote-unquote home area that they could do that, then they would be familiar with, okay, if I'm in this area, then I know I've got water resources over here, I've got a farm over there where I can count on reliable food sources from its cattle, or maybe there are a lot of deer in the woods over here. It would make a lot more sense if they did have a home area like that. But, yeah, to answer your question, yeah, I'm convinced they would have to move around. If they stayed in one place as big as they are, if you think about their caloric requirements on a daily basis, yeah, they would go through the food resources in any given area in pretty short order. So, yeah, they'd have to.
Now, okay,
Can I jump real quick with a comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
About Vic, you talked about the caloric requirements. You talked about something that is quite important scientific concept. There's a particular scientific concept that I keep going on over and over and over. It is called the MVP, or the minimum viable population. And the theory goes like this. It's from biology, and it says it takes between 750 and 1,000 members of a species to continue that species. Now, suppose we look at, you know, if we had 750 Bigfoot in Pawleys Island and Charleston, North Carolina, we'd be tripping all over them. They're not there. But that's where I had my sighting. And in my opinion, in my humble opinion, that is the absolute argument for entities that are inside of portals, because we just don't see enough of them. Yet they still live century after century after century. I don't know where I was going with this, but I just felt like it was a good time to break in and say this. Vic, can you please comment on this? And Vic and Matt, would you please forgive me for jumping my MVP argument? I don't know what kind of argument it is, but like, whatever.
Well, Matt, that's about the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. No, I'm kidding. No, you make good points there. You make really good points. But no,
I can understand. I'm going to get crushed.
No, not at all. Not at all. No, I can see why you would think that, but recently I had a guest on the show who had a really good saying that he put out there that I really like, and that is, I think he was watching an episode of House, where House was talking to some guy, I guess, and this guy was telling House, well, when you hear hooves clicking on the floor behind you, don't think zebra, think horse. Well, I like that explanation, because it does make a lot of sense. Okay, yeah, I guess it is possible if we have things like quarks that can wink in and out of existence. I guess it must be possible somehow, some way, that maybe they are coming through portholes from some other place where they're breeding. I I guess that might be possible, but I think the more likely explanation is actually what we're dealing with here. And that is, if you're dealing with numbers like they must have to support viable populations, maybe they come together, they congregate in certain areas, unbeknownst to us, and then breed, and then they tend to go back to wherever areas they normally live. Maybe that would explain how they could have the numbers that would be required for them to maintain viable populations, but at the same time, not be so thick and elbow to elbow in numbers that they're just basically crawling all over. If you have a certain area that's big enough and remote enough, they could go into those areas and breed and do what they needed to do, and then after that's been done, spread back out and go to where they normally live and support the numbers that you're talking about. That is more of the hooves of horse hooves clicking on the floor than what you just put out there, postulated. That's more of, in my opinion, the zebra's hooves clicking on the floor. Now, yeah, you can't have a zebra behind you. Those could be the hooves of a zebra, but again, like I said, what is more likely is, I think, they just come into areas, congregate, do their thing, and spread out. I think it's actually horse hooves that we're hearing on the floor and not zebra hooves.
That's a good point, because animals, a lot of animals will migrate like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just putting out something that's in one of my books, and it's about MVP, and it's a well-known biological fact, not theory, but anyway, I just wanted to see what you would say, and that's interesting. Now, I will think about that as I like to read my articles, so I'll think of that and see if it possibly deserves an update. But anyway, yeah, just so it's from House, and it's the Zoos versus Hooves. I'll remember that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I just
and again, I'm not putting you down.
And I'm writing it down right, Vic. I'm writing it down right now.
Well, again, just so you know, yeah, you might be right, and I might be wrong on that. But if you ask me for my opinion, I think that's more than likely what's going on here. So, yeah, who knows? Who knows?
A lot of animals, though, do migrate and join up together during the mating season. That is true. A lot of, you know, and I'm like you, Vic. I believe that the population isn't as big as everybody thinks of these things. But, you know, the mountain lion, you know, how many people have been out in the woods and seen a mountain lion? I spend most of my time out in the woods, and I've only seen one mountain lion ever out, you know, not in a zoo. You know, you're looking for these animals that are, it's like a needle in a haystack. Like if you look out here where I had done some research here recently, they've had some Bigfoot sightings, and I was looking at the overlay of the map, and it's along the Cumberland Gap, along the Cumberland River, and it's nothing but old mine shafts and nothing but forest. And you're looking for a needle in a haystack, and that needle is moving through that haystack. So, you know, that's why people don't, you know, come across them every day. And a lot of people that do come across them, of course, they don't say nothing. They're not sure. But I think the population's small, and I think it's even getting smaller because I've got, you know, pretty good, strong, some evidence that the government's going in and killing a lot of these things. One area in particular that's kind of going to ask you about is the land between the lakes. Now, how many Bigfoot reports compared to Dogman reports are given to you from land between the lakes?
Well, I don't think I've ever received a report of a Bigfoot sighting in the LBL. All of the sightings that have come from that area have been Dogman sightings. So, yeah, there haven't been any Sasquatch ones coming in.
Okay. Okay, good deal. Now, how far, let's see, Mammoth Cave. Have you had any Dogman reports around Mammoth Cave?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, one guy I know who has his own YouTube channel, Kirk Stokes, a really good man. He talked about taking his girlfriend down there, and I guess he had a run-in with some pretty belligerent dogmen, and got run out of the area. So thinking about it, yeah, I guess Kirk's encounter or encounters, and then there was one more eyewitness who contacted me to let me know about some run-ins he had in that area, but so far to date, I can only think of two sightings that have come in from that area.
Okay, I mean, that's not too far from Land Between the Lakes, but, you know, Mammoth Cave is, I believe it's 412 miles of cave that has been documented that they have actually discovered so far to date, and, you know, they're still researching it. And anything can move from there from state to state. I mean, 412 miles is a... is a lot of ground to cover, or underground, I guess you could say. The whole dog man. Now, what are the Indians' belief on dog man?
Well, they're pretty varied. Some tribes, they're convinced that if you see something that looks like a dog man, it's got to be a skinwalker. Then you have other tribes who believe that they are what we think they are. They're just cryptids out there doing their thing. We're not talking about humans who magically transform themselves over to the form of a beast. You're talking about something just like a Sasquatch. It looks the way it does 24/7. But some tribes think that they're defenders of gates. Gates to maybe the spirit world, I guess, or maybe gates of that lead to other places. Other tribes, they think that dog men are evil and they should be avoided at all costs, never talked about, and if you talk about them, then you're going to draw them in. So, yeah, the opinions on what they are and what they can do, they vary widely. So,
kind of similar to the whole Bigfoot with the Indians, you know, some believe it's this physical wild man, and then others believe that it's the spirit, you know, the force. So it's very similar. I know I've kind of turned this into a dog man show, but I'm really fascinated about the whole dog man, trying to boost my knowledge on all these cryptids.
Matt,
I'm definitely
want
to do some research in my area.
Matt, stop
huh?
it. You get an A plus. So keep going. Okay. You get an A plus. Keep going.
I know. What is your best dog man story, Vic? Since it's kind of getting close to a.
Wow, the best dogman story. Well, so many eyewitnesses share their experiences with me that it all gets lost in the wash if you want me to sit down and from start to finish tell you about any particular encounter that really stands out the most in my mind. But one that wasn't shared on the show that it's been years since this was shared with me, but it was a really intense experience that I do have permission, if I remember correctly, to share. Is this woman, this poor woman, was working at a lumber mill, working security at this lumber mill somewhere in rural Oregon. And she was working night shift all by herself, and this was a pretty big place, too, with woods all around it. She actually sent me a link to a Google Maps overhead of it, and I was thinking, whoa, when I looked at it, yeah, no wonder. It just had tons of woods that just rolled on and on all around this place. Well, nonetheless, one night she was out walking along one of the back buildings that was on the back part of the property when all of a sudden something happened to let her know, okay, well, I'm not alone. If I remember right, I think there was a dog man that jumped out from behind this big machine, and when it did, she froze for a second and then took off running for one of the front buildings where the offices were. Well, this thing came after her, and she went into one of the back doors of this building. She tried several doors, but all the ones she had tried were locked until she got to one that was open. It was like something straight out of a nightmare. Well, she goes into this building, and this building where the offices were, it had all kinds of equipment in there where they could mill wood and store lumber and all this. It was a big building. Well, where she went through this door, it wasn't at the part of the building where the offices were. It was towards the back of the building where all the, I guess, a lot of lumber was being stored, and there were a lot of machines for, like I said, milling the lumber. Well, she went through the door, and was running towards the offices when she could hear this thing open up the door behind her and come in with her. Well, when she heard that, instead of trying to make a beeline for the offices, because she would still be in plain sight, she ran up these stairs, the closest set of stairs to her, into this large mezzanine-like area. Well, she went up the stairs, and she was trying to hide, and not long after that, she could hear that this thing had come up the stairs after her. It had seen her. So after she was hiding for some time, she decided it was going to be in her best interest to try and bolt for a set of stairs that would take her down and leave her pretty close to where the offices were. Well, when she made that break for it, the dog man saw her and was hot on her heels. Well, she went down the stairs, and I guess it jumped down the stairs after her, and she ran into this door that led into the break room. This break room was, I guess, right in this little section of this big building where the other offices were. Well, she's hiding under one of the tables in this break room, and she could hear its claws clicking on the floor in this hallway. Well, there was this big picture window, she said, on one of the walls of the break room that led to that hallway. Well, after sitting there for, I can't remember how long it was, maybe she sat there for a couple of minutes, she mustered up the courage to peek up over the table and look through the window to see if she could see anything. Well, unfortunately, when she did that, there were two huge dog men looking through the window, just standing there staring in her direction, and when she peeked her head up over the table, they just moved their eyes. They didn't have to move their heads. They moved their eyes, and now they're both staring into her eyes. And they're just standing there, staring through that window, looking at her. Well, they've already demonstrated the fact that they've got the ability, the knowledge. They know how to open up doors. Well, the door to the break room was right there on the other side of that window. So now she's worried, okay, well, are they going to come in and get me? Because I think that was the only door in or out of that break room. So they basically had her trapped like a rat. Well, she ducked back down under the table, and I can't remember how long it was that she stayed under there, just waiting for them to come in and get her. But eventually, she mustered up the courage to get up and sneak over to the door and listen. Didn't hear anything, so I guess she opened up the door, and then she finally ran out to her car, which was parked fairly close to that building in the place's parking lot, and she tore out of there. But, yeah, that's one of the most memorable ones that have been shared with me that I've got permission to share that haven't been put on the show. Understand, people listen to the show and they think what you see is what you get. By far and away, the most terrifying dogman encounters that have been shared with me, they're encounters that you're never going to hear on the show because the eyewitnesses are way too torn up to come on and possibly share it again. Sharing it with me just one time, that was almost too much for them to bear as it was. They're not going to come on the show and go through that again. So, yeah, there are plenty more experiences like that and even more terrifying experiences than that one that have been shared with me that you're not going to hear for that reason that I just told you about. But, yeah, to answer your question, that's one of the more notable encounters that have been shared with me over the years that I think I do have permission to share with you tonight.
Wow. Awesome.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys, we're about 4 minutes away from 0 hour, and I wanted to thank you for being on here. And as we learned from Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling, we go around the room and we ask everybody to plug whatever they've got coming up. So we will start with our guest, Vic Cundiff, who just does some great podcasts. Then we'll go with Matt, and then I'll close up. So Vic, you got coming up in the next two or three?
Well, I'm not sure which eyewitnesses are going to be on the show this week or next week, but at this point, I'd just like to, for people who don't know how to listen, just make sure they understand how they can. If you go to dogmanencounters.com www.ReverendRobertHarris.com/podcast. You'll find links there so that you, if you want to listen to the YouTube versions of the show, you can listen that way. If you want to listen to the podcast versions, that does require a premium membership. It's only $2.99 a month, but you can listen commercial-free that way. And also you can download episodes and take them on the go with you. If you want to go camping, I don't know why you'd want to do this, but if you want to go camping and listen that way where you don't have an internet connection, if you go to dogmanencounters.com/podcast, you'll find out how to do that. For BigfootEyewitness.com, if you go to BigfootEyewitness.com/podcast, you'll find out how to listen to episodes of Bigfoot Eyewitness. But, guys, thank you so much for having me on. It's been a great time.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Matt, what have you got, what have you got coming up?
I've got the Harlan CryptoCon coming up this weekend, Saturday. It's free to the public. I'll be there speaking. My partner in crime, Angelina Shear, she'll be there, Director MUFON, and she talks about the Bigfoot alien connection. We got that going on Saturday, and hopefully get a lot of Dogman reports out of there, Vic. I've got seen some pretty interesting pictures, too, from some of them. Hopefully I can get some good stories and research out of that this weekend. Got that then, and then in 2 weeks, I will be back out in the woods in an undisclosed location and doing some more Bigfoot research or whatever cryptid comes my way. So next couple weeks, pretty busy. I'm going to also, if any reports, any encounters, any type of cryptid, I don't care if it's paranormal, Mothman, Lizard Man, Dog Man, Bigfoot, or anything else, find me on MECRO, Mountain Empire Cryptid Research Organization, on Facebook. Join the group, or you can send me a friend request, Matthew Delp, and I'll add you. Send me a message. Let me know of any encounters or anything. And Vic's show, go and listen to his show. I'm on an episode on there, so go ahead and he's got some really great shows, and of course always listen to Scary Cast and Bigfoot and Company.
Absolutely. And I will say, first of all, thank you. What have I got coming up Thursday night on Scary Cast, 11 p.m. Eastern? We have Janice Carter, who wrote 50 Years Bigfoot of Coexistence with Bigfoot. She's just superstar on Robin McCoy. And then on the 14th and 15th of June, I will be a speaker, one of the featured speakers, the Spruce Pine Aliens and Expo Space in Spruce Pine, North Carolina. I love the place. It's going to be a lot of fun. At a point, I'll have my book out, UFOs and Anomalies. We'll talk about a lot of crazy things, and that's the way I like it. And I guess the most important thing is tomorrow night on brucepine.org, we have an interview with Seth Jones, who won the assault on Matt Mitchell. That started at Spartanburg Memorial Auditorium and went all the way up to the top of Mount Mitchell, Western North Carolina. Fine man. He is a student at UNC. He's from Mooresville, North Carolina. He's 18 years old. He withstood one of the greatest endurance feats in America. So we're proud to have him tomorrow night. That'll be 9 p.m. at spine.org. Co-hosts are Vatwell, the author, and of course Papa Stroh, the maestro of wrestling. Can't get anywhere with Papa Stroh. He's the best. So anyway, thanks to everybody for listening to us. Don't have many seconds left. This is the one and only Bigfoot and Company. We'll see you next. And there's the bitch lady telling us we can get out of here in 90 seconds. Thank you, Vic Cundiff, so much.
Thank you, Vic.
Oh, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
We'll see you soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.